Hello, I'm Alberto Salvato. Welcome to Crime Time, a Virginia criminal law podcast. I'm here with Anna Dvorak, Anthony Norse, and Ann Thayer. Enjoy the show.
So here it is, legal disclaimer, because we are lawyers and we've got to write one. So if you are listening to this podcast, thank you. We sincerely hope you are listening to this podcast for its entertainment value and not with the intention of acquiring legal advice for any individual case or situation. I mean, come on, you wouldn't take advice from someone you have never met or spoken to directly, right? If you were bleeding profusely, you wouldn't listen to a podcast in hopes of a bandage somehow materializing over the internet and onto your 3D printer. Seeking actual legal advice can be just as important as a tourniquet. The hosts of this podcast are in no way intending to create an attorney-client relationship with any listener. Sorry, we are sure you all are great people, but we cannot stress enough how little we know of you and your case. And rather than risk an awkward moment, let us just remember we have never met. Nothing on this platform should be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. We are just a group of friends with differing opinions and viewpoints, which we will try to explore through discussions of current events, law changes, and whatever else floats our fancy.
Earning redemption through OAR. That's our topic for this evening. And we are lucky to have two very special guests on. We have Mayo Wilson from the Commonwealth Attorney's Office here in Fairfax. He was on a few weeks ago. Actually, he was on a couple months ago. And we also have Lula Kelly from OAR, which stands for Opportunities, Alternatives, and Resources. And we're going to have a discussion today about what programs are available within the courts when somebody does get in trouble so that we can try to get them back on the right path or help them get some services that they may need. So welcome to you both. And we'll start with Mayo, since you're experienced having been on before. Can you tell our listeners, remind them who you are for us?
Yes, I'm Mayo Wilson. I'm with the Fairfax County Commonwealth's Office. I've been in the office since January of 2020, right after Mr. Toscano took office. Before that, I was a defense attorney for about 13 years in Fairfax and Loudoun, and been with the office the past 3.5 years.
Thank you. And Lula Kelly, welcome. We're excited to have you on. We have a lot of questions from attorneys and people that aren't really sure all the programs that OAR has to offer and have questions about your newest program, which encompasses a lot of the other things you guys do, which is Taking Root. So welcome. You want to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Hi, I am Lula Kelly. I'm the program manager for our Divergent Taking Roots program. I've been with OAR for 2 years. Previously, I was working in Homeless Services in Prince William County for 11 years. And that's what I've been doing up until now.
Awesome. Well, we're excited to have you guys on today. And I guess we can get started.
I wanted to point out, just real quick, and I know this is not topic related, but I just wanted to point out that I knew Mayo before he was a prosecutor. And I still like him, even though he's on the dark side. That's all I want to point out there and say. So now we can, I wanted to get that off my chest.
I appreciate it, Alberto.
There's tension there between us. I know it.
All right. Well, I'm just going to jump past Alberto and pretend he didn't talk. So Lula, tell us a little, I know you've been with OAR for a couple of years, and just for our listeners, give them a little background, especially the non-attorney listeners, about what OAR does in the community. Just a very brief overview.
So OAR is a reentry nonprofit organization. So what we do is we help people who are in jail and who are out of jail to kind of rebuild their lives, help them to re-enter into the community, try to make a better and a smoother transition. And that is through a variety of different ways. That could be employment, housing, transportation, mainstream benefits, case management, getting them resources to other community partners to kind of help them just transition a little smoother than just coming out and being stuck in the world.
So you work in partnership with different groups like Department of Corrections and jails and courts to try to help those folks get back into the community and to be, for lack of a better word, diverted from the criminal justice system eventually and back to being law-abiding citizens.
Yes, correct.
So that's awesome. And OAR has been a nonprofit for as long as I can remember. And it's got several programs with the court. And you mentioned you are currently doing the Taking Roots program, but are you familiar at all or just briefly about the other programs that OAR does for court-involved individuals?
Yeah, we have a couple of different departments. So we have VASAVOR, which is our violent offenders program. They're referred directly from state probation. We have a whole department that works with them to reintegrate them into the community, follow them very closely, making sure that everything that they need, they have to reenter into society. We also have a court programs department where they have a BIP program, which is a batterers intervention program, where they do the BIP classes in Spanish and in English. And that is for people who have been involved in a domestic violence situation and have been court ordered to take those BIP classes. They also teach anger management. And they also have a first-time offender petty larceny shoplifting program that goes through that office as well. And they also run our community service division as well. In that program, we have our reentry program. And that's where we have case managers that go into the jail. Currently, we're in Loudoun County Jail, and we work with people when they get out of jail. So they can come in and get emergency services. You know, sometimes people get out, they might get arrested in Fairfax County, but they live in Maryland. We provide transportation to them back home. We can also provide them with case management at the time so that they can reenter into society in a smoother transition. And then our newest program is the Taking Roots Diversion Program. And that is for people, first-time offenders and misdemeanors, people with misdemeanors, that we kind of diverting them from jail or court. And what they do is they come in, we do an intake and an assessment with them, figure out what the root cause is of the issues that they are having. For instance, if it's like petty larceny, okay, why are you stealing? Are you stealing because you just want to steal? Or are you stealing because in your mind, you didn't have any other choices? You were hungry, you wanted something to eat. You didn't have the resources. So we're here to figure out what that root cause is and to work on what those root causes are. They'll take classes with us. We will, like I said, refer them to outside resources for mental health, substance abuse, different things like that, homelessness, all of those different kinds of barriers that are keeping people from being more sustainable in the community. And once they finish our program and they finish everything on their service plan, their charges are dismissed and made expungible from their records.
Well, that's awesome. And just to be clear, Taking Roots exists in Fairfax County only, right?
Correct. It's currently only in Fairfax County.
And OAR is across Northern Virginia in this area.
We service Prince William County, Loudoun County, and Fairfax County.
Now, are any of these programs, or not programs, but even the classes, are they available pre-court? Can I have, say, a client do the petty larceny class or the anger management classes that are available? Can I have them do that for mitigation purposes and also to get them help before we go to court? Because I assume the faster we get help for those people, the better. Or does it require a court order for them to be in it?
There are certain times when they have to have a court order, but anyone can come and sign up for our classes. If they've been involved in the justice system, they can come and say, hey, I want to take, you know, the anger management or the BIP, because most of the time people know what's coming down the pipe and they want to kind of get ahead of it. And they go ahead and come in, do a referral, do an intake and get signed up for the classes.
So when you said you service all those counties, do you have to be a resident in one of those counties or just charged in one of those counties?
So for all of the programs, except for Taking Root, you have to be a resident of those counties. So for reentry, BIP, all of those, you have to be a resident of those counties. For Taking Root, if you are charged in Fairfax County, regardless of where you live, you can be a part of the program because your charges are in Fairfax County.
So Mayor, you're not going to get off the hot seat here. How is the Commonwealth Attorney's Office using OAR to satisfy Mr. Viscano's mission?
So, I mean, it's kind of like Lula said, as the Commonwealth's office, we're trying to get to the root of people's issues. So for things like the petty crimes, we understand that a lot of times those are fueled by drug addiction, homelessness, joblessness, whatever the case may be. So when we identify those types of cases and we propose they do the Taking Root program, we're doing it with the mission of sending them to OAR and hopefully helping them get back on their feet so they can stop reoffending, essentially.
If they do reoffend, are they out? And this, I guess it is a question for both you and Lula. Are they out? Okay. Are they not able to go back to an OAR program, or do you have options for recidivists?
We haven't really explored that yet, to be honest. You know, right now, and I guess we've graduated, I want to say between 5 and 8 people, I believe.
13.
It's been 13 graduates now?
Yes.
So, I mean, So we haven't really had a chance to explore what we do with recidivists. I mean, it will obviously be a note that they've had the benefit of a 298-02. So the next time they come to court, especially if it's on the same type of charge, it may be looked at very differently from our office.
So how long does the Taking Roots take?
So it'll depend on the person. One of the reasons why the intake and assessment is in person, and one of the reasons for that is so that we can get a better understanding of the person, what they've gone through, what they're going through, and how this service plan will pan out. Everybody's service plan is individualized. So there's no cookie cutter, you know, thing that we have or we just cut out. Everybody does this thing because everybody comes in with such different traumas and issues and concerns. We're trying our best to really get to that root cause. Normally it's about 6 to 9 months, more on the 9 month for someone with higher barriers and a higher risk. Some of the people that come in, I want to say they maybe be on a more of a lower risk and they are on it. They're like, I don't ever want to come back into the system again. Like, this is crazy. What is the fastest way that I can finish? So we are getting a lot more of that where people are very eager to, and I think especially when you really explain to people what the benefit is from this program. It's not just about getting your charges dismissed and expunged from your record, which is awesome. Okay. Because what we found is that sometimes it's easier to get somebody like a sex offender a job than it is somebody with a petty larceny on their record. And, you know, it's a trust factor, of course. And I think people are starting to understand that, you know, some, we all make stupid mistakes. And when you, some of these mistakes can travel with you throughout your life. And so people are starting, I think, to understand that piece. And when you want to rebound and get yourself back on track, they're starting to notice that just even having it on your record that it was charged, even at some point, if it was dismissed, it doesn't look well. So I think people are, especially lower barrier people, are really trying to say, what can I do? Can I start early? Can I go ahead and start working the program, you know, right after when we're doing their intake? Can I start today? You know, I'm like, okay, calm down. We need to create the service plan. Let's get everything on track so that the CA's office has what they need. Your lawyer has what he or she needs so that we can work together, all of us, to kind of, you know, help you out. So sometimes people are finishing within 3 months because they don't want to stay in the system.
What can I do as a defense attorney to facilitate my client's progress?
So communication is key. I will say that. Communication with the CA's office, communication with your client, making sure your client is communicating with us. One of the things that we find the most difficult is that once you've given that referral and once the CA office does what they do, the background check and everything, and send that to us, getting in touch with the clients is the hardest thing. Because as we know, most people don't answer numbers they don't know. So if the best thing that can happen is say, you know, when they get ready to leave court, hey, walk across, because our office is located right down the street from the courthouse. Go over to OAR right now and get an appointment. Or here's the number, call immediately to schedule your appointment. Because the sooner we get them in, the sooner we get that service plan done, the sooner they can get started and get better traction on what's going to happen and what's going to go on with their lives.
Guys, I got some questions from some of our fellow attorneys and I want to make sure we get them in. And this is kind of fitting with the topic. So one of the questions somebody had was, you have to have the court referral. Like, is there a plea and then you're referred to Taking Roots to do an intake, or do you get the evaluation done first and then they would do the plea? Or is it, could it be either way?
So this is how the process works. You guys go to court, you talk with the CA, hey, I think my client's a good fit for the Taking Roots program. You fill out the referral, you guys go back into court, the judge sends it to the CA's office. I usually get it from the CA's office. I get the referral from the CA's office, and then I start calling to schedule the intake. It is a lot easier if you send your client over immediately or have your client reach out to us immediately. And that's only because, like I said, most people don't answer numbers they don't know, or the number's disconnected, or they might not have a phone number. And then I'm reaching back out to the attorney to say, hey, can you facilitate a meeting with your client? We've called 4 times. There's been no return calls, or the phone numbers don't work. Filling out the referral completely is another big issue. Sometimes they won't have an email address or emergency contact. And even though, you know, like, why do you need emergency contact? That is how I reach a lot of clients. Is when I can't get them, I go to the emergency contact, which is usually a mother or father or family member, and then they get them to get in contact with me. Or my next step is their attorney saying, hey, can you facilitate that meeting?
So another question folks had was, what is the recommendation when someone doesn't need services like housing, substance abuse, employment? So for example, if it's a one-off like petty larceny, but the person doesn't have a pattern of that kind of behavior. Like, I know you said you have a lower level process where they wouldn't need as much. So that was a question somebody had, is what if they don't need all the services that Taking Roots can offer?
So one of the things foundationally that everybody takes, regardless of your crime, is impact of crime. That is a class that teaches people about the impact of their actions and their crime, not only on them and the victim, but also on the community, on their family, the victim's family. A lot of times what we see is, for lack of better words, selfishness in committing crimes, thinking that you're only, well, only person that's being harmed is me. I'm the one that got arrested. I'm the one that, you know, might be in a jail, or I'm the one that got the summons and got to go through this, not looking at what the big picture is. Most people look at the spot on the wall. So impact of crime teaches people to really look at how what you do affects everybody around you. And one of the things that's like, that I've heard like so many times, they'll say, well, it was Target. Target has plenty of money. Target might have plenty of money, but what happens is if you keep stealing out of Target, and now you got about 100 other yous stealing out of Target, that now is going to fall on your family members, the community, because Target has to get that money back some way, shape, or form. So they raise the prices. So people don't really think about that piece. But that's one of the foundational classes that everybody gets regardless. And they might need one other class, like maybe self-control or responsible thinking. A lot of times there are key things in each of the classes that we teach that help people to really get a grasp on reality and what that looks like.
So someone had a question about, is the case null processed or dismissed? So this is probably going more towards Mayo. And I know with the 298s, which allow for deferrals and things, is it a guarantee of expungement, or is it going to be a case-by-case scenario? Or are there cases where you're just trying to keep someone from jail and it's not going to be null processed or dismissed? People were unclear about what the end results could be, or if it was a set thing, or if it could end up being whatever you create it to be.
Typically, we put these in the 298-02 to be expungible. You know, when we thought about creating this program, it was with the idea that we weren't going to jam people up. You know, the idea was getting to the root of the problem. If we've actually addressed that, the individuals have done the work, then we feel that they should be rewarded with their case being null processed and having the ability to get it expunged off the record.
So it's a null processed, not a dismissal. That was a specific question we got from a couple of folks.
Typically in my 298-02s, I put null processed. Some judges say, well, it should be dismissed. I'm willing to do it either way. As long as it's gone and it's allowed to be expunged, I'm fine with a dismissal or a null processed, however the defense attorney wants it.
Then the last question I got from folks was, does an accused person have to enter a plea to benefit from the program, or can they just do it and then have the case dropped without a formal plea of guilty or no contest, or a Crespo not guilty with no objection?
I think most judges want some type of plea, because with the 298-02, if you don't complete the program, you know, it's the way I word them, at least in my 298-02s, is then you're convicted of the charge and there's no right of appeal on that. So I think most judges ask for a plea.
All right. I just wanted to make sure we got our questions in. So
absolutely. I mean, it's like, how do you get in? And all these are nonviolent first time charges, right? It's not, there are no violent crimes not come in.
No violent crimes, but not necessarily first time charges.
Okay.
You know, we've had people on there with plenty of, say, petty larcenies, and I'm not going to say we can't do taking root on a violent charge. I mean, I've had an APO where the officer came to me and was like, is there a diversion program that this person can go into? Because they're suffering from substance abuse. And if they didn't have that problem, this wouldn't have been an issue. I have done APOs in taking root when the officer has agreed with it. But typically, we're trying to stay away from violent crimes.
Does that include regular assaults? Unless
we have not put any regular assaults through. Like I said, typically we're trying to stay with nonviolent offenses.
Not a violent offense under the code.
and just APO means assault and battery on a police officer, just for,
yes.
People who
for don't, the non.
Yeah, from a non-attorney. Somebody had to explain it to me last week too, so don't feel bad.
And to go back to your question, Alberto, with regard to how can you help benefit, like she said, getting that referral in as soon as possible. Our office doesn't like handwritten referrals. I know sometimes I'll bring a stack of referrals, like if I have a 2K docket, I'll bring a stack of referrals. And that's just to get the information on paper. But normally I will ask the attorney, hey, here, take this, fill it out, and send it back to me. I'll send you the web version and you can send it back to me, or send it to our diversion inbox. And I also think now what we're probably going to start trying to do is implementing a system to where when we go to court that first day and we get the continuance to get the referral done, when that assessment comes back, maybe asking the defense attorney to put in a motion to move that case up so we don't have to worry about bringing witnesses or anything back in. We've noticed that some judges are not allowing that second continuance to actually enter the 29802 agreement. So
is it on your site and OARs, or where is the online form that people can go to?
I think it's just on our site.
If it's a fillable PDF, I mean,
it's a fillable PDF.
Yeah. Most of us carry a laptop and we could do it right then and there. Even the 2K Wi-Fi is terrible, but
it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we could just fill it out. Now, as far as motions to advance, I mean, depending on the judge, I suppose we could just put it on for a status hearing in a couple of weeks, which would probably be better.
Either a status or, like I said, to enter the 29802, because what happens is the judge has to order them into the program.
Right.
And so when we come back for that 29802, that assessment is the terms of the 29802.
Well, and so I guess what we're also saying is that if you have a case that you think is appropriate for it,
bring it to us early.
Get it early before you get the information, get a referral form, go on the website, get the referral form, because then you can have all that information, sit with your client, get as much of that information as possible. And I know that that's not always possible. I assume that 75% of the people that go through the OAR programs are indigent. Some of them are unhoused, so they are not as easy to get in touch with as a retained client who's reached out to an attorney and has hired them to do stuff. So they're more proactive and being in touch and just more capable. Like if you don't have a phone or you don't have internet access other than at the library, it makes it difficult. But would you say percentage wise, you see 75, 80% of your Taking Roots folks are coming through the indigent system?
Yes.
So supposing somebody is in the program because of a petty larceny, and while they're going through the program, they pick up a second petty larceny. Can that new charge be wrapped into the existing program?
Potentially. What we would need to do is on that second charge that they picked up, talk to the victim in that case and see if they're willing to allow them to still go through with the program. And if that is the case, then we've had situations to where we've wrapped those cases in.
So the complaining witness can veto any entry into the
program? They can. You know, if it's an individual that we know has a substance abuse issue or whatever issue, then people from my office typically try to talk to the complaining witness and truly explain the situation. You know, this is what's going on with this person. This is why we feel that they should go into that program. And this is how we feel it's going to benefit not only your company, but society, or who, you know, it may not be a company, maybe an individual. This is how it's going to benefit everybody. And I haven't had anybody disagree with me. I mean, I've had stores initially disagree, and then when I talk them through the program, it's like, okay.
Makes sense.
Yeah. That's a carrot and stick approach. I mean, people want consequences, right? They want there to be a consequence if you're not doing what you're saying you're going to do, which clearly a 29802 has, because the consequence is a conviction. And so there's a lot of self-agency in this. Speaking of the restorative piece of this, my understanding about Taking Roots, except for with the crimes that do not have a victim, like I'm trying to think, disorderly or somebody who's, you know, having a mental health crisis, or it's, you know, they charge them with obstruction or just trying to, it's like, I need to move this guy from this road, but there is no victim.
Yes.
I understand Taking Roots is more of a restorative justice program. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I mean, we deal with those cases too. You know, a lot of those cases where you run into the disorderlies, the obstructions, the resistings, normally there is an underlying substance abuse situation going on there. And so in those cases, we speak to the officer and say, you know, look, this is what's going on with this individual. Or the officers will tell us, you know, this person has a long history of drug abuse, or, you know, is homeless. And most of the officers I've talked to who have had cases that way, they've been pretty upfront and said, you know, this person needs services. They don't need to go to jail. They need services. And if you can give them those services and we don't have to deal with them anymore, great. So, I mean, a lot of the officers are really on board with it.
And as we said earlier, it's too soon to tell if some of those folks are going back. And I mean, when people need services, we know there's it's an ebb and flow and there's a bit of a cycle, but it's too soon to have any understanding if somebody's back at the same spot they were before or causing some of the same issues, small petty crime issues that cause people to be nervous when you have people with substance use issues as well as mental health issues in the same area. People think of those individuals after a time as a nuisance, and why can't the police do something about it? Is it too early to see if there has been some impact in that perception?
I think for us, it's a little early. I mean, we're tracking everything, you know, keeping numbers on everything, but yeah, too early to tell if, you know, how these people are actually panning out. I don't think there's been anybody that's far enough outside of the program or completing the program to really get a gauge on whether people are reoffending.
Now, Lula, have you done case management yourself, or do you oversee the program and talk to your case managers about how people have progressed through their graduation?
I do both. When we started the program, I was the program manager and the case manager. So I have more staff now, of course, because the program is really starting to pick up. But I keep in contact with clients, even the clients that have graduated. I still keep in contact with them. We do an assessment when they come in and when they do the intake and assessment, and we do it 6 months out, every 6 months. So if you finish the program in three, I do an assessment when you're finished with the program, but also like 6 months later to see where you are, how you're doing. Most of them, they still call me, text me, "Hey, Ms. Kelly, I just want to check and see, you know, is everything okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm good. How are you?" And I usually do, we do a monthly check-in with those clients. So far, I will say so far, so good. That I will say.
There hasn't been too many people ghosting the program or anything like that.
No, and I'm really surprised at the amount of people that are, like I said, eager to do it. Now, don't get me wrong. I have some slow rollers that I got to call a little more, you know, remind a little more. Don't forget you have class. I have my, you know, that I will be like, "Hey, don't forget you have class," because some people are not as tech savvy. And this is what I'm finding is that a lot of people are not as tech savvy as you would think they would be. And that's why we'll do classes in person and virtual. Like most of our classes are virtual. They all have a virtual component, but you do have the ability to come into the office and do the classes. And those are our day classes. We offer that ability to come in and do that. And we hold classes in the morning, in the afternoon, and in the evening, Monday through Thursday.
And you have to have a pretty big staff to accommodate that. And there's a lot of people potentially who will be in that program.
We've been very blessed. We have a staff member for every class that we teach. We also have some very long-term and great volunteers that have worked with us for years in the jail and teaching classes in and out of the jail. So we're utilizing them as well. So it's been, we're blessed. We're actually looking for even more people. So if you know people that, you know, want to volunteer to facilitate a class, by all means, you know, give them my number. I'll be more than happy to talk to you.
That's awesome to hear. Alberto's good at teaching classes.
I can do it. I'm pretty good. I could try something, but it'll probably conflict me out of cases. So I'd rather not do that. Don't need to pay the bills.
Talked about you guys offering like a dog education or animal education class, because we have them for parenting, anger management, driving, all of those things. And there's not really for all the animal cases about neglect or abandonment or
abuse,
medical care, all that stuff. Yeah.
It'd be great to get animal control involved. Maybe they could do a nice class for that. For diversion. I mean, that's what they want. They want compliance. But anyway.
So how many people have started the program? Not to complete it. We know that 13 completed, but how many people have been in the program?
We had those numbers up. I want to say we've probably had about 80, correct me if I'm wrong, like 80 something referrals.
I want to say we're about 87 referrals so far.
And the program has been going on for what, 6 months, 8 months?
It's been going on since
last April,
February of last year.
April, May timeframe.
Yeah.
Wow. That is awesome.
So 87 since April 2023? 22. Okay. Yeah. I was about to say, that is a lot.
Talk about a ramp up.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
I don't think there have been 87 cases in court the last 2 months.
And I take it just from hearing how some of these things are going, that some of the more, like the mental health treatment docket is something that, you know, we use for much more complex, like, I mean, not that people wouldn't have SMIs, but just people with much more complex needs, that would be the place we would refer people to over Taking Roots. Or can Taking Roots handle some of the complex dual diagnosis cases?
So we do have, and this is what I've seen, that there is, like Mayo had spoken about earlier, there's either a substance abuse or a mental health component to a lot of the cases, most of the cases. And I think the understanding, probably what I've learned is that, and I'm no therapist or residential expert on, but when there's a substance abuse, even if there's substance abuse, there's some kind of mental health component that's going along with that. So we utilize CSB when people either, you know, admit, or we can kind of see that there's some things going on. Those are things we don't wait on for court for them to go back and have that 29802 done. We immediately refer them, do a referral to CSB, because we found that if the more we get ahead of things, the better it is for the client or the participant. because there is a likelihood sometimes that if they're not stabilized in some way, that they'll go back out there and reoffend before they get back to court. So you kind of want to try to help them as soon as possible when it comes to things like that.
I know for like the veterans treatment docket and mental health and things like that, do intakes right as they come into the jail? Do you guys do that when people are in the jail, might be people that could be eligible or take advantage of taking roots, or no?
No, we do not go into Fairfax County Jail and do it. They have to be released for us to do that. Now, we have started going over to the court. So we have a room right outside of 2J where we're housing. We're there every day, Monday through Friday, to catch people in case, you know, somebody's late. Oh, you know, if they're living in Maryland or DC and they feel like coming to Fairfax is like going to South Carolina. I don't know why people think Virginia is so far from DC and Maryland.
They do, though.
Wow.
I live in Maryland and the traffic makes me feel like I live in Mars. So it's that bad. It takes me 2 hours to get home sometimes. And it'll take me 2 hours to get to West Virginia if I without traffic, even less time than that. So that's why it seems so far away.
But I live in Alexandria, and driving to Woodbridge, forget about it. You might as well be on the moon. Like there's these certain little pockets where you can get to places.
Yeah, the traffic gets horrible because I live in Woodbridge, and I tell you, just coming down at 123 sometimes. Once you hit 95, it's like
at that point you can walk home probably faster than your car is going to make it.
Yeah, that's when I pull over for a Starbucks moment.
I know exactly where you're talking about. Yeah, no, it's, you know, traffic is, there was a time, I don't know if you guys remember this, Judge Gallagher always wanted a court down on Route 1, just like we have the Herndon Court, just like we have the Vienna, but it would have been obviously run by Fairfax prosecutors because there's no special town, because for people getting to court from that area, most of them don't have a license and are charged with driving without one or driving on a suspended license. So, but they're not able to get places. And the bus service, it takes 2 hours to go from the Fairfax connector to change the 29K to come down 236. Why do I know all the bus routes? You know, it's like all my clients have taken them over time and it takes forever. And then people are like, why are you late for court? And they're like, well, I started yesterday. And
and now I'm finally making it.
Yes. It's a real thing, but I do hold out hope that at some point, especially with programs like OAR and other that we can have other locations. Also, it would be nice to have a court right next to that Krispy Kreme, which is right next to adult probation on Route 1.
Yeah.
But
one of the good things about OAR, like we provide transportation, things that small as transportation. You would be very surprised at, which you probably won't because you know you're waiting on your client to get to court and they're late. But you know how that can be an inconvenience. Like you said, that tow 2 hour bus drive or even getting the money for that 2 hour bus drive can be difficult. So we even provide transportation. If they are in there and they come in and they're unemployed and we're trying to help them get employed and they're like, I don't have a way to get there. You know, and sometimes people, you know, want to do stuff last minute. And I'll get a call at 8:30 in the morning. Miss Kelly, I got a job interview and I got to be there by 9:30 and I don't have anywhere to get there. And here I am trying to Uber somebody or yellow cab somebody to, you know, a job interview. But these are just some of the, you know, what sometimes people look over, but are really huge barriers to people being able to get back on track. Something as small as transportation.
That's huge. I mean, in this area, just like what Anna was saying and everyone's saying, without a license, without a car, it's almost as if you don't have legs because the traveling is so difficult around this area. It's not like New York. New York, you can get anywhere usually faster by train than you can by any vehicle on New York City. It's bad. I mean, this area is just bad. They did a bad job with planning. Mass transportation just does not exist. So, yes, that's why it's that ride system, just that is fantastic. And I think that's a huge amount of support for someone trying to be successful in this program.
Yeah, I also think that we all, you know, for most of us in this podcast, probably we've always had somebody who at 8:30 in the morning, if my car broke down, I could call a friend and they could take me to that job interview, or I could call a family member. There's a lot of our clients and there's a lot of people who go through your system that don't have that person, or they have a family member who also doesn't have a car and doesn't have $2 and it doesn't have Uber. And so it is, people forget that it's like, well, why can't you phone a friend? I'm like, well, you could phone all the friends you want if they don't have the ability to get you places. And so organizations like OAR and Lula doing what you're doing, what I'd also like to say is I hope it's sustainable, because what you're describing, which is a wonderful thing that you're doing, is very, it's very intensive for the case managers and for the program. And so I do really hope that you're successful in beefing up the number of people who are helping your program and are able to provide that support to our community members.
Well, thank you.
That's why we wanted to have you guys on, so we can make people more aware, because if attorneys are aware, then they can start referring people. And I don't think a lot of the attorneys even knew that this existed or what it was all about. They don't even so understand the treatment dockets, and they've been around for quite some time, right? And so, which is important, right? Especially in a county this big. So I know you're doing good work and you're helping a lot of folks that otherwise back in the day would have gone to jail or just had convictions and that's it, right? And then that one petty larceny or whatever it is causes them employment issues or housing or whatever their issues are for like quite a long time, right?
That haunts you. Petty larceny haunts you. It doesn't matter on paper.
If it was the marijuana charges. Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter on paper, no matter how. Yeah, it could have been $1, could have been $10, could have been back in the day, $199. It still would have looked the same on a piece of paper with petty larceny. You could have been stealing for food because your child was hungry.
I was talking to a pastor in our not at my church, but he's an Episcopal pastor. And he said one of his classmates at seminary, like 15 years ago, had a petty larceny and he still couldn't get housing. Like he could not get a rental because of the petty larceny, and took like, you know, basically dispensation from the Pope to get a place to stay. And you think, and as you said, it's easier to get a sex offender. I mean, I had a guy go through the Vassivor program and he's always been employed after he gets out, not a sex offender, but it's like he had violent crime and, you know, he's always been able to work, but it's like, you have no petty larcenies on your record. So somehow you're a bigger, oh, you just like rob people or beat people up or hold them up, but you didn't steal anything from me, so you're good. That's a very weird dynamic.
Very. And I was so surprised. I had a guy with petty larcenies on his record and could get a job. But once they were in the background, he sent me an email from Taco Bell. Taco Bell said, once you get these charges cleared off your record, come back. We definitely want you to work here. Like, that's how crazy it is. And so, you know, it doesn't have to be, which is weird, murder or something like that for you to get shunned from the workforce. It's something as simple, like you said, you could have went in there and stole a $10, you know, pack of meat, and now you're not trustworthy to work anywhere.
Or even null pros charges, even if you get it null pros or dismissed, yeah, it's still an issue. This is just crazy. So the expungement stuff that's allowed with 298s now is huge for people. And hopefully the sealing stuff that's coming in 2025 will help folks that have had stuff on their records. I think it's 7 years on misdemeanors and 10 on certain types of charges that you're going to be able to petition, hopefully. And some of them, I think, will be, I don't know, who knows what that bill will end up being, but that gives people hope to get some relief.
I'm going to pull an Alberto here, and I don't know if you guys all saw the movie Ant-Man, but the part where he's working at Baskin-Robbins and the guy calls him in, he's like, Baskin-Robbins always finds out. Like, he found out about his criminal record and fired him. It's like, damn, Baskin-Robbins. But it's so true. It's just, it's really disheartening. But, you know, I do hope also that people who listen to this who are employers recognize that they, you know, you should give a chance to somebody who has a petty larceny or because it's not a murder case.
The reality is, on most petty larcenies, there's some people that repeat or they've done it a few times before they got caught. But a lot of people, they get caught that one time and go through the system. You're not seeing them back, right? And that's not somebody that you can be scared of taking a chance on. And that's part of this message too, is people have redeeming, people mess up, right? And it's about, what do we do with it? And you know, maybe someone that's got several different things going on, maybe you don't want to hire that person, but somebody has that one thing and was accountable and got it dismissed or worked hard or whatever's going on, like, you want to give them that opportunity. And you shouldn't just avoid it just because of the charge. They may be the best worker you ever had, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know. And here in our Taking Roots Diversion Program, we believe, we have a motto, a hand up, not a handout, because most of the time, that's just what people need. I'm a firm believer in teach a man to fish, he'll never go hungry. But if you just feed him, you're part of the problem. So that's what we are trying to do, is really teach people to be fishermen up for themselves. And that's a huge in the community to look at that piece, because we work with employers that we talk to a lot about hiring the people that are on our caseloads, because, you know, we've all made mistakes. You know, some are bigger than others. Some people got caught and some people didn't, but everybody needs a chance. And our ED always says, how many chances should you give someone? And his answer is always until they can get it right. So you give them chances, no matter how many times they come in our office, you know, because we do have a lot of different programs. How many times they come in and they might have got arrested, you know, came in, they just got out of jail. And then next week they come back because they just got out of jail again and they come back. But we keep giving them the opportunity to restore their lives because somebody got to believe in you. Because if not, then you're stuck. So I think, you know, as a society, sometimes we're quick to throw people away. And we have to start like really trying to figure out if we were in their shoes, would we want to somebody to just give us a little hope of redemption? And I think that's kind of what we do at OAR, just give people a little hope. We try to make it a judge-free zone. You know, we all sinned and came short. However, you know, what can we do to help you out?
Sometimes it's just pointing out that people do have support, or, you know, there's support available. And many people don't realize that because they have no self-worth, or they grew up not being around that support, not even realizing that, they do have family and that family wants them to do better. Sometimes it's better just to have someone who's not family to point that out and say, look, we're here to help you, but you also have X, Y, and Z at home. So I think it's cool.
You have to have those real conversations with people. Mm-hmm. I'm a realist.
Do you do JDR cases too, or is it just, will you guys do any domestic cases? Or I know I saw a public defender arguing a bond to one of the judges in circuit court about putting their client in Taking Roots, and the judge wasn't aware of the program. So I didn't know if you guys would do things in circuit court and JDR or just GDC, even if you get things amended, or if the judges have been, like, I don't know how much buy-in you have with any of the three different levels of the courts, or the three different courts that we have in Fairfax.
We haven't really expanded it to circuit court as far as felonies. So typically if somebody wants to put a felony case in, what I tell them is amend it to a misdemeanor and put it on the misdemeanor docket. And we'll go through the referral process before they, you know, go on to that misdemeanor docket. So when they do come to court and, you know, in GDC, then the referral's already done.
What about JDR, like a destruction of property or something like that with family members that's not an intimate partner or family household, like domestic assault or something you would consider violent?
Haven't approached it with the JDR judges. We were kind of running it through GDC to see how the program went before potentially expanding it to other stuff.
I was just curious. So we shouldn't come to you for referrals for them?
I'm going to Mayo. I've done plenty of begging. I have no shame. I've cried many times in front of Mayo. He usually throws me a nugget, but not every time. So
I'm a softy.
I don't know about that.
Well, we've been talking for a while. Is there anything that you guys think we might have missed, or that you want people that may be hearing this episode to really focus on or take away from this episode?
My biggest thing is don't hesitate to suggest a referral to OAR or try to put your client in OAR. We're anxious to get more people in. I personally would like to see another 70 referrals before the end of the year. So if you think your client is a good fit for OAR, don't hesitate to ask for a referral or suggest it to an ACA, Assistant Commonwealth. They may agree, they may not, but it doesn't hurt to ask.
So does it have to be approved by you, or can it be any Commonwealth? Or let's say your Commonwealth that's assigned won't do it. Can someone come to you and say, I think this person would be good? Or is it just
so any Commonwealth can do it. If they're on the fence about it, they'll come ask me. But all of our Commonwealths are equipped to say, okay, we're going to refer this.
If an assistant says no, can you override them?
I don't like to, but yes, I could potentially override.
Okay. I think that was the last thing Mayo wanted to answer.
Well,
we had to drop the bomb, Anthony.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want a bunch of calls for a bunch of lawyers who
he comes up with a title and a grenade all in one episode. It's crazy.
I mean, within our office, if somebody is struggling with whether or not they should refer, most of our assistant commonwealths are pretty good about coming to ask me, what do I think about it?
But I mean, to Tony's point, though, would it sometimes help to come to you first?
No. And the only reason I say that is because I'm going to defer to the commonwealth that's right in the courtroom, because they know the background on the case.
Yeah, I just thought about my question. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. There's no way you can follow every case.
He was just trying to give you extra work, Mayo.
I get it logistically, but like, because especially because misdemeanors are done the day of,
but dealing with the fact that sometimes we can get in a continuance like once or something, it depends on the day, depending on the case. And I've certainly had success being like, look, my client takes a while to process information. I'm going to need more than the 30 minutes I have in the hallway to explain this Taking Roots program that I've suddenly been offered because it's a misdemeanor case. We're not amending it down from a prelim where I would have possibly talked to a Commonwealth attorney beforehand. It's my experience that the judges in a misdemeanor case are a little bit more, they're aware of how staffing has always been on those cases. And so, you know, continuing a case is not as difficult, but it would be nice in a case that is early identified as this is a probable one to find some way to deal with the GDC team as it's currently, however you guys are dealing with it now, to kind of flag this case to say, hey, whoever gets this docket, it's, you know, this person's going to be asking about Taking Roots so that it's not like a person getting a huge trial docket and then being like, and I've got 10 people asking for Taking Roots that day, right? Like, and I have to evaluate all this. Do you think there could be a way in the future to find a way to flag that so that it's less crazy on the day of court? Or maybe you haven't found it to be too crazy for those.
I haven't found it yet. This program is still fairly young. So, you know, we still have some kinks that we're ironing out. So I guess another thing I would tell people is, you know, also be patient with the program because we're not perfect yet. You know, it's not something that's been going on for years and years. And, you know, we have a streamlined process that works flawlessly. That's not the case at this point. You know, we're trying to get our numbers up to create processes where everything will run smoothly going forward, but that may not always be the case right now. So I would say patience is key with this program as well.
And it sounds like it's better to ask the Commonwealth and try to do the program and have be told no, and that we don't think this is a good fit or the victim's not on board or something like that than it is to not try, right?
So, I would definitely agree with that. Yes.
Okay. Lula, what about you? Is there anything from the program perspective and dealing with people that need all these different services and dealing with the courts and us attorneys and the judges and everybody else? One question I just thought of briefly is, do you guys put people on active probation still? Because I know a lot of the judges like probation. So Taking Root, you're not going to do probation with Taking Roots complete? Because we didn't ask that. And I thought in some of the 298s where there is not Taking Roots, judges want to see supervised probation to make sure that things are being met. So that, I guess that was a question I just thought of.
No, we don't do probation. Now, a judge has ordered probation. That's not typical, but they have that authority to do that. And they've said to, I think maybe two or three clients, they wanted them on probation. And so they put them on like pretrial or something like that. But that's not typical because we want to try to keep it away from more of a punishment type of deal. But I think as far as I echo, you know, Mayo, as far as like communication is key. You're the best defense for your clients. And so offering them and talking to the CA's office about them getting into the program. If there's any questions or comments or concerns, like I said, we're in the court next to 2J Monday through Friday from 9 to 11:30. So, you know, you ever have any questions about anything that any attorney, they can just stop in and ask. We'll be more than happy to assist. And just making sure that your client understands communication is key in this process. The better the communication, the better the outcome.
That's awesome. And do you guys have anything else you'd like to add?
No, other than Mayo can override everything and go to him first.
You're going to get Mayo killed.
Mayo's information is M. No.
Yeah. His phone number, his personal cell phone is.
He loved it when people cry. Anyway.
Well, thank you guys so much for being on. We really enjoyed having you. People have had a lot of questions, and it's even as much as all of us that are on this podcast are in court pretty regularly, almost every single day, I would say it's so good to just get a recap on everything that you guys offer because you forget sometimes. And with the new program and the services and all the different things, we should be equipped as defense attorneys to be ready to put our clients or to try to get them into those services and programs. And so we're really grateful to you guys for taking time to come on, and we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us.
And please get the word out for anybody that didn't hear, don't know, you see your friends. Hey, put the word out for us.
Will do, for sure.
Thanks for joining us on Crime Time. Please join us again for our next episode.
If you enjoy our podcast, Crime Time with Virginia Defense Attorneys. Be sure to share our podcast with someone that you know. You can find our podcast on most of the major platforms like Spotify, Google, and Apple, as well as some of the smaller podcast platforms. We also post on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn, so you can find our episodes there every week on Tuesday at 9 a.m. If you want to leave us a review or a comment and tell us what topics you'd like to hear about, we always welcome feedback, and we're always looking for new ideas and guests to bring onto our show. We hope you keep listening, and thanks for being a supporter of our podcast.